Hi guys, it's Sylvie, co-host of Talking Too Loud. I am not Chris Savage. Podcasting started as a voice-first medium. You recorded a conversation, you published the audio, and people listened in their headphones. But suddenly, it feels like every podcast has video. Shows that used to live entirely in your ears are now on YouTube, TikTok, even people's TVs. So what actually changed? To unpack that, we talked with Brittany Luce, longtime producer and host of NPR's It's Been a Minute.
What really caused things to really click is TikTok.
That's only part of the story. Because when a podcast becomes visual, something else changes too.
The intimacy of listening, I think, naturally creates this desire where people want to know more about the people who are making the thing.
In this episode, Brittany explains why previous pivots to video failed, why this one finally worked, and what creators misunderstand about making the jump to video podcasts. Because adding video is a lot more complicated than just buying a camera. This is Talking Too Loud, and we recorded today's episode live at On Air Fest. So buckle up, settle in, it's gonna be a good one.
Very excited to be here at On Air Fest with all of you, talking about shifts. We're talking about shifts in technology and product and marketing. Today, we're going to be talking about a big shift that is happening in podcasting that we're all feeling. We have a very special guest with us, Brittany Luce. Woo! It's been a minute. Thank you for being here, Brittany.
Oh my God, it's a pleasure. Also, I love this microphone.
Fantastic mic.
I'm so used to having one that like hangs next to my head, but this is so much more official, dramatic.
Yeah.
Powerful even.
I'm in character right now.
Yes. Yeah. You're doing great. So the show is called Talking Too Loud because when I get excited, I cannot control the volume of my voice. This is a real thing. It's happened since I was a child. It can be a problem. But we like to start the show by asking our guests, what has you talking too loud today, Brittany?
So today's Wednesday, which means that tonight there are new episodes of A Love is Blind coming out. I am talking too loud, not just about the new episodes, but also I feel like we're going to really find out what's going on with Chris and with Alex or Alec, whatever his actual name is. We're going to find out if he's in gambling debt, I hope. We're going to find out if day trading is a real job. I'm looking forward to that. So that's what's got me talking too loud. It's like getting to the bottom of what's going on with these scammy men.
Yes.
That's exciting.
That's always what I'm talking too loud about, all the scammy dudes.
You know, I think for me, it's we have a friend who's going to be on Survivor 50.
Yeah.
Which premieres tonight.
What?
We're literally screaming about
and
it.
And so you can't find out if they want it or not.
Like they haven't told us anything.
Yes.
And we've tried.
We've tried.
We've tried and we've tried.
Yeah.
Let's give it time.
Yeah. Yes. Well, look, I have to start with the question of how do we end up in this moment? How do we get here? And what I mean is, why does it suddenly feel like every podcast has to be on video?
That's a loaded question.
It sure is.
I mean, well, okay. I think that many people in this room might remember like the great pivot to video of like 10 years ago. Now, at the time, that didn't quite feel like it was a real tangible thing to me. Mm-hmm. Just simply because like very often I had noticed that throughout my career, my personal listening habits were very similar to what we would later find out were consumer listening habits and how a lot of audiences like to get their stuff. So there was like a way in which I liked video content, but I think the way in which we were being pushed to make it didn't quite line up with I think, the reality of how people were taking it in. In some ways, I think that like, I don't know, in some aspects, I think the consumer was ahead, right? In terms of liking videos that were quick and sort of to the point, but also liking the sort of longer BuzzFeed videos that like, I mean, there was a period of time where me and my husband, we had parasocial relationships with everybody at Paralike. We had parasocial relationships with everybody at Bon Appetit, right? There are some ways in which I think the consumer was ahead and also some ways in which I think that some of the companies were ahead or media organizations were ahead in terms of like not quite knowing where to find the customer, but like maybe having some sort of content out there that like they might want to be into. I also, about, was it 6 years ago in 2020, I had a Quibi show. For people who don't remember what Quibi is.
R.I.P. Quibi.
Yeah, R.I.P. R.I.P. And I was actually one of the people who actually got to make a Quibi show. So I made 140 episodes.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, can you find them online? No, because Roku bought Quibi and, like, they probably put them in some vault somewhere or deleted them all. I don't know. That was like a period of time where actually I think in some ways the company was ahead, right? Like there was this idea that like people did like short content, but like, I don't know, in some ways I think that sometimes like audiences and like people who are making content are sometimes having to teach each other sort of how to engage. Mm. And I think that like what really caused things to really click is TikTok. I don't know if anybody here is a listener of Celebrity Memoir Book Club. I know it's a different show now. It's called Good Noticings. But like I first noticed that something was really, really changing when I would see their videos on TikTok that were about like some really like very specific lesser known celebrity story. Mm-hmm. And after I saw about 8 or 9 of those, I was like, oh, I want to listen to their podcast. If it's more of this, sign me up. And I started noticing, I think they were honestly some of the first people to really, really nail that way of like converting a listener, but also making me really interested in them as individuals. And I don't know, to me sort of like TikTok in 20, even though it had existed before, really like the way that people started to use it between 2020 and 2022, I think it was like a moment where a platform and like a style of making videos met actually with like audience demand. Like
yeah. Mm-hmm.
We were finally in alignment. Like, so like I said, 10 years ago, I don't know if the pivot to video was real, to be honest with you. Yeah. And 6 years ago when Quibi was trying to make it happen, we know how that went.
Too soon.
Too soon. Too soon. Too soon. And perhaps in some ways, maybe too polished, like right at first blush. But I think right now we're at a moment where like companies and like individual creators, news organizations have sort of figured out how their audiences want to be engaged. And also I think that audiences have in some ways taught us as creators how we want to, well, I guess I'm like the audience and also sometimes I make videos. But at least for me, as like an audience member, I can tell that a lot of creators have come, they're like being responsive to sort of how we naturally watch things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. So you're kind of saying like the parasocial thing started to become real. Like we basically could, as an audience member, feel the connection to somebody.
I think in some ways also, but also I think that's like, sometimes it's like the right size idea. I think that like part of the reason why Quibi didn't work is because there was maybe too much going on in some of the shows. Like some of them were super high. I mean, I think I watched one of them and there was like, I don't know, explosions, special effects, dead bodies. Like it was like,
it almost started, like, it started with too much. Like it was like a format that didn't match the medium.
Yeah. And I think that like, there is like a certain type of, it's not just like a parasocial thing, but I think it's like the right size idea. Like people have an idea that they want to get in 25 seconds. There's an idea that people want to get in 90 seconds. Listen, I earlier listened to a TikTok while I was washing dishes. That was just a Judge Judy episode. It was just a Judge Judy episode. Yeah. It was 18 minutes, but I was in there like, boom, like, oh my God, I'm so glad y'all put this out here.
She is still doing her thing.
She's still doing her thing. Listen, listen. But yeah, I think it's really like you said, some of it is parasocial, but I think a lot of it has to do with like finding the right size idea, finding the right approach, and really actually like paying attention to the audience and seeing what actually lights them up, what actually gets them
to respond. You're kind of saying like our behavior changed as audiences.
Yeah.
And then like suddenly these short clips, these little moments that might have been like a really funny moment for a podcast or a really interesting moment or something where you learn that we're willing to digest in that way. And so actually that can really change, that can move the needle, right?
Absolutely, like, absolutely. And I mean, and that's something that works with compelling news content. That's something that works with comedy. And that's something that works really well with like pop culture stuff. I mean, honestly, I was just watching this morning like a really short video of this guy who was a reporter at like Yahoo Finance. And he was breaking down all of like the Russian espionage subplot of the most recent one or two episodes of Succession. And like, that is something where I was like, wow, this is exactly something I wanted to know. I would have loved to have heard this within a broader podcast. Mm. But it like, I don't know, it was just the right size idea and it was on and the right way for me to find it.
totally. Something we've talked a little bit about is like audience expectations. And like once TikTok kind of came about, like the audience started expecting more from hosts. And like,
don't I know it?
You're like, leave me alone. I don't want to talk. But that idea that like you get more access from somebody visually, like, does that resonate with you or?
Maybe I think to a certain degree, yeah. Like the show that I host, It's Been a Minute is, I mean, how often do we come out? Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 3 times a week. And see, there's Yolanda over there. If you listen to the show, that's Yolanda Sanguini. Okay, she's like the head honcho. Okay, so yeah, she's right. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 3 days a week, and so people get to spend a lot of time with me. But it's interesting that people constantly want to spend more, which is very nice. And it's very interesting too, because even though my show is kind of personality driven, it's generally about the world. It's about culture. It's about other people. It's about ideas. I'm always learning something. The show is not really about me. But something that I have learned just from making the podcast, and I'm sure a lot of people in here who make podcasts have had the same experience, people are interested in your point of view. They're interested, and it doesn't necessarily have to be you specifically. I think that the show is just as much about like sort of how I'm coming into certain things. Sometimes it's about how some of my colleagues are coming into certain things. We have an episode coming up soon that is about, that I wish we could have done video for, that is about one of my colleagues at NPR is like completely offline dating. And so, you know, obviously the episode is not about me. I haven't been on a first date in 11 years. But it's about a specific person's experience. And, you know, the intimacy of listening, I think, naturally creates this desire where people want to know more about the people who are making the thing. Mm-hmm. The same thing happens when our producers, you know, decide to come on mic sometimes. You know, the listener always loves to hear from them and likes to hear their sort of like signature and fingerprint throughout the show as well. But I think it's just a natural curiosity that comes out of the intimacy of audio.
That's such an interesting idea that basically the intimacy of listening to a podcast, someone can play a role in your life, right? Like 3 times a week, you're playing a role in people's lives. And they're like, well, I hear you all the time, but can I see you too? You know, it's like, you're my friend in my head, but I also would like to see my friend. Does that resonate with you?
I think so. Well, I'll tell you what, it resonates with me as a listener.
Yeah.
I mean, I love, there's a really good show. I think it's called Financial Confessions, or I think it's from the Financial Diaries. But specifically, I think, which is a show that's hosted by Chelsea Fagan, and she interviews people about their finances and stuff like that. But there's a serious sort of offshoot that she's been doing called Just Getting Good that is about women 50 plus, how they handle their money, how they did their lives.
Yes.
Divorce comes up a lot. It is juicy. It is so good. Mm-hmm. That is, even though I've gotten to know Chelsea through, not like in real life, but through like following her on social media and watching her YouTube channel and stuff like that. But I love when the video episodes of that series in particular show up, because I just as quickly fall in love with these women who are like, you know, one lady, I think she was in her 70s, and she was like, I started modeling 10 years ago. And I'm like, girl, tell me everything. She's like, I ended a 25-year marriage. I'm like, let's keep it going. I immediately want to know, who is this person who's living this fascinating life? So even if it's sometimes it's not just like a desire to, you know, connect more deeply with someone who I listen to a lot. Sometimes it's like they have a really compelling guest, and I'm like, who is this person that is living this life?
Yeah.
I want to lay eyes on you.
So let's talk about the perspective of the podcast producer. How do you go about this transition from audio to video? Because I know a lot of people are thinking a lot about this, working on this, trying to make it happen. It's not easy. Like, how do you think about it?
That's a really big question. I mean, there's so many aspects of it. There is like, I think that sometimes you're thinking about like, you as much as people want to hear from you, you worry about overexposure. People are going to get sick of you. Me, that's something I think about a lot. I'm like, are people going to get sick of me? Another thing is like, where is this going to happen? You know, I mean, listen, like, now that we've gotten comfortable with remote recording, which like pre-2020, it was like, that was not the case. I mean, I can go and visit my parents and where I have like a setup at my parents' house where I can go and visit them, and I can record like episodes from there. I can work. You might hear like a lawnmower far off in the distance through the window that you're not going to get in my home studio, but I can pick it up and kind of do whatever. that is not the case with video recording. It's like, where is this going to happen? Do I have the space? What about lights? What about camera? There's like equipment. There is, what is a phrase you all use when we were prepping this conversation? Tech stack.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what apps are you using? What technology is helping you achieve this?
Yeah.
But also too, where's the value for the listener and what they're seeing? Like, sometimes the value is straight up, they just want to see you and like, that's enough. And maybe that's enough for the conversation is like, or maybe you're talking about something really juicy and people want to see your reactions.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Reactions are huge.
Huge.
Yes. Recently recorded a video episode that's not out yet that was a follow-up to a conversation that we had previously had on our show about hypergamy, which is this, which is marrying like up in class. Mm. And the assumption that does not match up with the data that you know, a high value man, quote unquote, not my phrase, right? A high value man who makes a lot of money is interested in, you know, a woman of any background, class background. Mm. And that is not the case. Listen, I mean, let the data and the stats show.
Bridgerton season four.
Listen, if you're a woman and you got the education and the money, you actually can pick of, you can have your pick of the men with the education and the money, even though, you know, frequently the opposite is something that people espouse to scare women into like getting with men like Alex and Chris from Love is Blind. I think that that's a conversation where it's like, okay, we're getting into some juicy stuff. Like I share about how my husband and I split our finances. Like people want to see, okay, like they want to see that sort of reaction. And then other times, like a long time ago, there's an episode of Quibi Show. I'm gonna try to find a way to post this on like Instagram.
You got it.
Like, what are they gonna do?
They leaked the Quibi files.
That's not gonna leak the Quibi files. I'm sure someone's waiting. Just waiting for that. But there was I used to host a show called The Nod. I co-hosted it with my friend Eric Eddings. Yeah. And Eric has famously been bald for at least a decade at this point. And we became both really fascinated with the idea of a lot of black men getting like hair pieces, like toupees, but not toupee is not a, it's not a good enough word for what's happening. Mm-hmm. So we found this fantastic barber in Brooklyn. And when we were hosting the podcast, we would have gone to see him and gotten like audio of the barbershop and like what it was like to get the cut and all this. You know, because of course we made Eric get like the Killmonger wig, like a full unit.
That is amazing.
it looked good.
Yeah.
But when we were making the Quibi show, it's like, oh no, this would be perfect in video. This
yes.
is something you want
yeah,
people to see.
Perfect.
Yes.
So if you're talking about a film or fashion roadman on YouTube, that's my guy. If you're talking about film or fashion, or if you're talking about even sometimes like articles, it can be really helpful to see specific quotes and things like that to get a greater sense of what you're discussing. Like there's some things that just kind of like require or really beg for like visuals. And then of course, like also like, I don't know about y'all. I didn't get into podcasting to have people see me. That's not why I did that. That's like, no, that was not what I thought was going to happen at all. It just gets more and more intense every year. But yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, like, I don't know what y'all look like if you record at home. I usually look like one of those dust bunnies from the big comfy couch that children show from 30 years ago. I look like a dust bunny that crawled out from under the couch. And so then when we got to shoot something video or do something like that, then it's like, okay, what are we going to do? I paid a makeup artist about a year ago to show me how to do makeup because I learned from my friends in 2005. And that, if you can believe, that level of bronzer wasn't cutting it anymore in the video episodes that we were shooting. So there's different types of investment that you have to sort of make into trying to get these things to work. And in some ways, I've been very lucky. Like, you know, sometimes I've, you know, recorded things from home, but we've been able to record like some full episodes of IBAM in really beautiful studios that we have at the NPR office. We did a really great remote interview with Hassan Piker that came out last summer. That was a really incredible experience. But also, like, I was very grateful when that interview, like, you know, went out into the world and that I looked so fantastically lit because it ended up on his stream.
Yeah.
I don't know who's watching that?
It's wild. It's wild when you look at the data of how a lot of these podcasts are being consumed now.
Yeah.
Because YouTube has become so huge. But we were just talking today. We were looking at some recent episodes of talking to that on YouTube, and it was like 78% of people were watching it on their TV.
Which is,
I watch YouTube on my TV. I've been watching YouTube on my TV for like seven years.
You were ahead of the curve.
Yeah. But it's just, it's pretty crazy how much behavior has changed. Because it's kind of like from those little clips, like scrolling through, do I like this person? Do I want to hear more from them? And then, oh, you find your way to the podcast. And then actually, they're literally on my massive screen in my house.
Yeah.
And I might be cooking or doing something else while it's up there. But like, my buddy's up there. And they're chatting with me. Listen, it's crazy how much changed.
That's when I'm washing dishes, which is like, I mean,
least once
my
a week.
Least yes. favorite. Yes. I mean, yes. literally, my husband is like, I'm like trying to gaslight him into being like, I'm washing dishes, right? Because I really do it like once a week. And that's what I do. I'll turn on my TV and that sort of like helps me sort of like zone out. Or like I love when I get on the train and like, maybe YouTube will fail me, but the Spotify video is coming through crisp and clear.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, it's like, I think you said, it's another way to sort of hang out with my digital companions who don't know me.
I mean, I thought that was a great tip on getting someone to come and help you and basically be like, how do I do my makeup for this? And how do I level up here and make myself feel more confident? And the other thing I would say, having made a ton of videos and having a comfortable shooting at home, is like, figuring out a dedicated lighting setup, which you said, but like makes such a difference. Like if you can sit down and look into the camera and feel like, okay, most of the shadows are gone.
I need help with that.
Your confidence and your ease is just, it's much better.
I'm in the process of figuring that out with my current desk at home. It's been a process.
Yeah.
Like you said, reliable, like, cause I'm doing it myself. It's different when you got people coming and help you, but yeah, it's different.
I think there's like the intimidation factor is so real. If you're like not a tech savvy person or you're like camera shy, something which both of those things I am. So getting on camera for talking too loud, I was like, no, I won't do it. But Wistia is a video company, so of course I did. And there were like things that surprised me about the process that I wasn't anticipating. So like, I was like, oh, I don't want to be on camera. I got into podcasting for a reason. And then I was like, wait, when I see somebody laugh at a joke or when somebody sees me laugh at a joke, there's a contagiousness of joy that happens in that moment. And it can like change the tone of the conversation. Or if I'm shocked, right? Like if I have a facial expression that's like,
yeah,
you know, it begs another question. So it really does go hand in hand with storytelling. I was not expecting that. So have you found anything in the video process that has just like surprised you or like that's even delighted you a little bit where you're like, oh,
you know what? How do I put this? I think that because even if we don't use the video, we often end up recording video because we record through Riverside very often. And so I can usually see the person I'm talking to, but sometimes you can't. Sometimes people's video lags, they have to turn it off or they don't have a camera or whatever. But when we're recording video, either in person or remotely, and somebody definitely has one, man, I have noticed that a lot of times those will be the instances when people cry. Mm. And I think part of that is because, like, when you know that you're recording video, you have to both really be present in a different way, which I do find sometimes actually physically more taxing in a way that surprises me.
It is.
But I think that there's something about that that kind of creates, I don't know, like an opportunity for a different kind of connection. And if you look up like video episodes of IBAM, a lot of people be crying, man.
Yes.
it's no shade. I mean, I'm grateful that they feel safe enough to do that. But I do think that some of that comes down to like a different kind of presence.
Yeah. I think that's a super, super good point. And like, that vulnerability is a double-edged sword for sure. So like to your question, Chris, about like what can people do to kind of like prepare for this moment. I think half the battle is just like managing expectations of the people who are going to be on camera and like let them know you're going to show up differently. It's going to feel different. Like you have to like go into video with like a different mindset.
I think that's right. I think also too though is I don't want to I also try to make I have like a spiel that I do when I record audio that I also do with video, and I say it to like everybody, like and sometimes we're talking to people who like are in front of a camera for a living, but I still say these things because it's kind of like a way. It's not just about, to your point, it's not just about like a type of tech check or something like that, or making sure they know like don't let your jewelry jingle or make sure you're wearing headphones. It's more so to kind of like get everybody in the mindset of like, hey, we're recording, you're safe, we're gonna be okay. Yeah. And I think that when recording video, it does take a little bit more to like let people know like, hey, you look great, this is fine. And after a few minutes, I think that people tend to get comfortable. I mean, every time I have to record video, I still get nervous. I still get nervous every time I interview people, and like it's really been a while. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think it's a sign that you like care and that I want things to go well. But I think before I used to think of like the nerves that I would get from the prospect of doing video as like this insurmountable challenge that was a reason for me not to do it. And instead I realized that it's just like, well, it's, I think it's just like the same nerves that go along with a lot of public facing work that I think everybody here is doing. And that's not a reason to shy away.
Yeah, do you find that, I mean, it's an interesting thread to go down because we will edit slightly differently for audio than for video. You know, video, we will show reaction shots and try to...
some reactions that don't make like a satisfying or a sensible noise. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Doesn't make a sound that makes sense to me.
That's exactly right.
Because you're also like trained to nod instead of like, yeah, yeah,
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody has like Zoom pantomime now. I mean, I don't know if y'all do, but I certainly do. So sometimes I'll catch myself like with my microphone is on and I'll be like silently, just in a regular Zoom call, like...
It's like, oh my god!
Weird. But you have to do that. I mean, because if you're like yes, I mean, there's a clip of me.
I still do that. Yeah, and I'm sure it's very annoying.
Yeah. Oh, he got trolled on TikTok because in one interview he couldn't help himself. Like you were like blow you up, but like you were so excited about what the guest is saying, so he was just like yeah. And then
all the comments are like, wow, Chris likes to say yeah, doesn't he? This guy just says yeah, and I was like, oh, it's just like streaming down. I'm like, okay, what have I done? I'm trying to encourage them, you know, but it is funny, these different things in terms of prepping for the audio versus prepping for the video, editing for both, making them slightly adjusted. I mean, even we're seeing more graphics and transitions and other things in video, like treating it as like a learning experience, a much more visual learning experience than it was before. And I just, I don't know, how do you think about that? I mean, it's because it is a whole other challenge.
It's still a learning curve. I mean, every single time I have made a different type of form of video from a podcast, it has always been a completely unique challenge. I've done this now in a bunch of different forms, whether it's like social videos and also like Reels is different than TikTok and like what you put on your like stories is different than Reels and like everything has like a slightly different format, right? And so there's different ways to think about it. Something I will say that I noticed though is that speaking for myself, my tolerance, like recently I watched a cut. We've been working on some video episodes and we'll have more to share about that down the line. But like recently I watched a cut of a video episode that I enjoyed the conversation. I was like, this is good. And you know, when we're writing like the intros for like our podcast episodes, people are into the sound design. They're down to go on a ride. They want a little story. Baby, I watched myself in that video and I was like, girl, if you don't shut up and move on, let's get into the video. It's like, there really is a much lower tolerance I've found, at least for myself. I can't speak for everybody else, but I have a completely different tolerance for what I will be willing to sit through as far as an intro for a podcast versus what I will be willing to sit through as far as an intro for a video episode. Yeah. Video episode, I'm like, time is money, baby. Let's get going.
And the algorithm agrees with you. They, like YouTube, loves that fast pacing, which is like, in audio, at least my experience, it's like you milk those moments, you go on your tangents, YouTube
wants to remind people of what you're talking about.
Literally, yeah.
You have to be like, remember this thing that I know we're talking about and it's in the title, but I have to remind you because I'm sure you're like driving or something like that. So I'm going to bring it up again.
Yeah.
But video, people don't really need that. They're like, I'm in it. And very often too, I think because, I don't know, there's like a, how do I put this? Because there's so much more data that people can get from the screen.
Yes.
Whether it's because they can see you. Sometimes it doesn't even have to be like media. They can see you. They can see the tone in which you're speaking. They can see your expression. You can add video. You can add photos, archival, whatever. They can see the title very often sitting right there. They have some idea of what's going on. There's a lot more data that they can work from than I think a lot of podcast listeners get. And so it's like, they're like, let's go, let's move,
It's also, you said this, but it is wild how different the platforms are. Like, the same video that you put on Reels and on TikTok and on YouTube Shorts will not usually perform the same way.
No.
All of the algorithms are slightly different. The things you need to do are slightly different. The how you handle the captions, the music, everything. And it really, like, we had a guest on the show at one point who talked about this. His name is Jake Klaus, and he talked about it. Basically is like, you have to think of each platform as a separate sport. And you wouldn't expect someone to be good at like basketball and tennis and curling to go to Olympics reference. And so like one of the challenges that people have is they try to do it all at once and then nothing works versus like staying on one platform. And even if it's just the clips, like iterating and iterating and iterating there. And that's what we found work.
That's so true. Yeah.
Oh, something else I do want to bring up that has been really surprising is that we put like, every episode of It's Been a Minute, at least for a long while, at least for a few years, an audio-only version of it goes up on YouTube.
Yeah.
People be listening to the audio-only version on YouTube. And I kind of get it because I used to be really big into when I had a desk office job, I would listen to The Breakfast Club all the time. I don't know if I was trying to give away my dignity or my brain cells sometimes with those conversations, some of the questions that they would ask sometimes, especially to the young women, but that's another conversation. But I would like very frequently like listen. I would open up the YouTube page and listen, and I would check back, especially if there was a question that I heard where I was like, you asked Tinashe what? Or why would you say something so disrespectful? And then I would rewind to be like, okay, what was their reaction? Very often, like, I wasn't always watching something on YouTube when I was listening to it, but I still wanted to have the video to reference. And so it doesn't surprise me that people who are maybe like hyper consumers of YouTube, which probably are a lot of younger listeners, or people like myself who are approaching middle age, but use YouTube like a younger listener. I think there are a lot of people that like use YouTube, like whether on their laptop, whether at work or their phone or their TV or whatever, as sort of like a background that they can then like go back and check on or like look up from. The other day, long story, you know, Blizzard, the whole drama, me and my husband lost power and heat. It was not fun. And I was like sick the other day. It was not cute. And I was like, I live on the first floor. I don't have light to read. I was bored as hell. I was losing my mind. But it was like, I was so bored. And one of the things I missed the most was, I ended up falling asleep like almost immediately. And my husband was like, yeah, it's because you don't have three screens in front of you keeping you awake. And I'm like, all right.
Oh, you're really admitting a lot right here.
I know. Yeah. But the truth is, though, is that I think a lot of people are very often consuming things in the same way.
Yeah.
You're watching something. You're also maybe moving your, I had a corporate job. You might be moving your mouse to let them know you're still there. and while also like someone says something on the TV and you're like, oh my God, who did star on Bonanza? And then you're like, let me open up my phone and look at Wikipedia. People are doing that. And I think that, I don't know, there's something about though, I think like because podcasts can be this longer conversation, a longer relationship, a deeper dive into a topic that kind of almost lends itself to both, I think, modes of consuming something where it's like you're super focused, but also if you want somebody to hang out with you, like Claire and Ashley from Celebrity Memoir Book Club, as it was called at the time, for me, when I was like working from home in 2022 and my husband had a job outside the house for 6 months, the three of us were coworkers in my mind. When I met them, I was like, sorry, girls, like we work together. And I think that, I think that, yeah, a lot of times video can work on both of those levels. So it doesn't surprise me that people are interested in our audio-only episodes, even on YouTube. And I would say if you are nervous, right, about getting the quality of video that you want or putting yourself out there if you're just not in the mood, right, I would say, like, maybe experiment with putting out audio-only episodes. I mean, listen, like, you see how these girls act when Taylor Swift puts out those lyric-only videos?
Yes.
Feral. It's sickening,
actually. They're rabid.
Rabid.
Yeah.
But I think that you might be surprised, similar to what you were just saying, Chris, about how there's, like, you know, people respond to different topics or different guests or different types of video on different platforms. To me, it makes sense that, like, I don't know, like, there are some topics where we'll see people have a reaction to it on social media. There'll be in our Spotify comments. But then we'll go on YouTube and it's like, wow, like 25,000 of y'all listen to this, yeah, like with no prompting from us. And it's because they were invested in the topic, and there was, which lets me know that perhaps there's 25,000 people on YouTube who might be really interested in our show that maybe we weren't currently reaching or currently
100%.
Serving.
100%. Yeah, it really is like choose your own adventure when it comes to how audience consumes. Do you feel like, I feel like when people, when they hear that and they're like, well, if someone's just going to passively watch my show on YouTube, my video podcast, why am I doing this whole production lift?
It's a valid question, but also like, y'all, podcasts are a lot of work. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And what do people do when they listen to the podcast? And they love it, right? But they're washing dishes. They're exercising. They're trying to zone out their roommates. They're trying to get through a very boring work day or an unpleasant commute. I think that at the end of the day, a lot of what we're doing that fosters this intimacy is companion work. And audio is a lot, like, now, I mean, I feel very supported. I have a wonderful team, but I have been in the trenches in the past. I've been on shows where we were expected to do multi-voice reporting in the field every week.
That's insane.
With five people on the team.
Like, insane.
Yeah, and so like that can also be a lot of work. I just think it's a matter of figuring out. I think if you are interested in video, which I'm guessing y'all are because you're here, what is maybe like the smallest, like the minimum viable product that you can begin with? And then scale up. Like, I started initially in podcasting from making like a really bad podcast at my friend's house. Like, you could hear toilet flushing in the background, early episodes. You could hear, it didn't sound like either one of us was talking into the microphone or knew where it was. You could hear sirens, children. I mean, after first couple episodes, we realized, okay, we should stop drinking beer before we record them. The first few episodes, we didn't even introduce ourselves or say our names, but people became interested in us and they stuck with it. And as we leveled up in quality, people were invested and they were interested in that. People love an increase in frequency or an increase in quality. They don't like you for you to go backward in either of those things. So it like is kind of counterintuitive as it might feel, especially if you already have like a podcast product that you're feeling really good about audio-wise, like start with the smallest, simplest type of video that you can do. So maybe that is something that is like an Instagram story, which like I have made a bunch of those, but like I don't do it consistently. I'm holding myself accountable. Okay. I
can't do it either.
I say it to myself as I say it to you. But it could be an Instagram story. It could be if you're not feeling Reels yet. If you feel like one of those did well on Instagram stories, then throw it on Reels. If you are not sure how you want to get into video, what it might be like, just try recording through, you know, like a platform that captures video and see how you feel about an episode. If you get like three or four of those together and you feel like they kind of look okay, I don't know, some people use Descript or something like that to kind of get through those things a little bit more easily if you're not like super native to video. And like, I don't know, or cut like social clips just from those. But just like, you don't have to immediately go to, this has to look like something that like Bill Simmons would make, you know what I mean? It doesn't have to look like the Oprah Winfrey
show. Yeah, get started,
show.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just like
get comfortable. And like, I think even that point of like, you can record on video, release on audio, but make a few video clips, put them out there. And that's like a pretty safe way to get going.
Yeah.
And it's also very addicting when it works.
Yeah, and then people like you, which at the end of the day, like I'll get stuff in my head where I'm like, oh my God, like I look so ashy or I look like crusty or something like that. I'm like, I'm not feeling this. Or like, my shirt is ugly, or it's the same shirt I wore last time. People don't care about that. Like, how many of us watch TikToks of people who are laying in the bed shooting from this angle?
Yeah. In the car. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. In the car all yeah. the time. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it's fine because it's not about really, like, it's not really about what, you know, like the giving them, like, people don't listen to the show because they think I look like Dochi. That's not why they're tuning in. Okay, there's Dochi for that. They like what I have to say. They like the people that we're talking to. And that's really what it's about. And an easy way for me to get out of my head is to think like, okay, it's not like really about me like that.
Yeah.
It's like I can like let it go.
I love that. It's just a very empowering message, which is like, get out there and try it and find the small things you can do. And you'll see it work. And you'll get more comfortable with it. So we're now running low on time, amazingly. We could just keep going. But I want to set up that we can do Q&A with the audience. So if folks have questions, we have a mic right up here. We have a little bit of time.
Do I have answers is the question.
We have the answers. So yeah, anyone, any questions out there? Right over here.
Hello. This morning, Rachel Martin said that people show up to Wildcard, her video first podcast, and the guests seem to have like no idea that it was a video. And she says, like, the publicist, like, you had one job. What? And I have a question for both of you, which is, I'm working with a new client as a publicist. He's a contestant on the new season of Top Chef. What do you wish, he's super cute and amazing and very talented, Lawrence Louis, root for him, keep your Olympics Peacock subscription going, you just watch Top Chef. What do you wish?
Those of us who like Housewives are already
Okay, you're already there, What do you wish that publicists told guests that come on your podcast about being on a video podcast specifically? I know you had your own little spiel that you said, but do you think if you were prepping the guest?
So we have so many wonderful producers on our show. I'm so grateful. They're so wonderful. They send emails. Hey, want to come on this video episode? Video. We're going to shoot video. Are you familiar with video? Video, camera ready, be camera ready, girl. Camera ready tonight. Like that, it's like, and every single time, it's again and again, just making sure. So, like you said, the publicist can be where the message gets lost. So the most important thing is to just make sure you're consistently looking the person in the eye and saying, this is video. And when you turn that computer on or when you get there, don't act brand new. Yeah. By the time that happens, it's too late to leave. You can't turn around. You can't reschedule. So whatever camera ready means to you is a phrase I think a lot of people use. Whatever camera ready means to you, do that. But also, like, you know, like at the end of the day, like, especially for your client who's like a Top Chef person and not like, say, one of my colleagues, Elsa Chang, just spoke to Gavin Newsom this morning, right? So there's going to be a different kind of question that your client's going to be getting than Gavin Newsom, let's say. Like, you know, nobody, I don't think, is going to be out to get them. You know what I mean? So it's like the point, I think, of that kind of interview is to, like, probably get to know them. The guest and the host are going to enjoy themselves. Like, it's probably meant to be in good fun. So, like, you don't want to psych them up, but you do want to let them know, like, this is probably, like, clips of this are probably going to live on social media. And also, like, I think drive home the opportunity for them. Like, there are episodes of, like, It's Been a Minute that maybe we put it on YouTube, and people liked it on YouTube, but then there'll be, like, a clip that ends up on social media that people just love. There was, you want to talk about feeling intimidated shooting a video? I interviewed Padma Lakshmi in person, which seemed like such a great idea, right?
Like,
until she came, and I was like, yeah. What was I thinking? And like, you know, so there was this great, though, like, moment where she's talking about, to bring it back around Top Chef, she's talking about how all, you know, the phrase American is apple pie and all the ingredients in apple pie are not native to the United States as we know it now. And they have roots from all over the world. And that clip has been seen by hundreds of thousands of people, or rather, liked, it's been seen by millions of people and liked by hundreds of thousands of people. And that was, like, such a great little moment and little nugget that for many people has value beyond her being the person saying it. It has value beyond my show. It has value beyond the TikTok that they watched. So I think that also stressed to them that there's, like, a real opportunity for them to be able to make an impression outside of what people might know them best for.
Yeah, for us, it's showing a lot of the social clips and being like, hey, this is what we are going to produce. These are ones that have done really well. And then they basically know, okay, like if I'm going to record somewhere and I need feedback or help or what have you with the setup, we try to offer that.
Yeah,
We have them show up early too. That's another thing, and kind of get them all situated.
No, totally. Having that extra time, that's what I was going to say, because the camera's always going to be kind of fucked up, or like the lighting isn't going to be right, and you just want to build in that buffer time for sure. And it doesn't matter. Like, I send those same producer emails, like, video podcast, video podcast, video podcast. And they show up and they're like, is this video? And I'm like, what? So just being super explicit at any juncture point, like, this is a video show. I think, like, knowing that the episode is going to be cut up into clips, that you are going to see yourself on TikTok or Instagram, can we tag you? Like, really making sure that they understand.
That stuff really matters for us. Like, we have to tell people up front, this is where it's going to be. Are you active on these platforms? What types of things are you willing to share? And it actually will sometimes factor in even to the questions we're asking, right? So it's like reverse engineering, thinking like, okay, TikTok is a channel that works really well for us. The clips on there work really well. Often we animate concepts around the clips, and it all kind of like helps add authority. But you tell the guest that up front, and then when you're going in with the questions, hopefully you have a rapport like this. It's very, very easy, but also you have those moments that you think like, this will stand on its own.
Oh, one other thing too. Put video at the very front of the subject heading in the email. Because I actually have shown up to other people's podcasts looking like, who shot John? And it was because they had it like deep in the email. And I was like, come on.
Yeah. Video podcast.
Yeah, do that.
Video podcast.
That's the takeaway from today. So we have time for one more quick question, and then we will shut this down. We're right here. Sorry.
Hi. So I think you've touched a little bit on this, but I guess you've worked in radio and podcasting with the radio face idea for a while, and then you go into the video space. So to me, it feels like when you turn a podcast from audio to video, you kind of like influencer-ify yourself. It feels like you go into the same realm as social media influencers. You go from maybe being the friend in your ear, in person's ears when they're washing dishes, to being on a much bigger stage. So sort of self concept-wise and like career-wise and mental health-wise, how do you deal with that shift of maybe being perceived more and as a host, not even thinking about the guests, like
being
perceived more, how does that work with you?
First of all, I've been in therapy for 1,000 years. Like consistently since at least, what year is this? 2020, at least 14 years. Okay. So there's that. Another thing is like, do I go through like the full psychological gamut of emotions every time I have to have a photo shoot for my job? Yeah. Is my husband on the receiving end of it? Always, always, always. But I think that there's like, three things to think about. One, at the end of the day, don't care what somebody who doesn't know me thinks. And like, I always say that I welcome like constructive criticism. Like if somebody is from a certain community that we've made something about, or we're talking about a topic like that and they have some thoughts, I always want to hear those. But I do not engage really with any positive or negative feedback too much about anything that happens that I make. I learned that very early on. I can tell you a different story. It involves people sending a bunch of racist emails like all in one day. And I was like, oh, I don't need to know any thoughts. So I also think that other people's thoughts are their business. Like their comments, if someone thinks I'm ugly or dumb or weird or boring, like, I don't know, there's other people that I think those things about. And that's my business. It's their business to think those things. It's not my business. Another thing, it's one thing if someone comes up to me and like throws an egg in my face, that's different. But comments that people make on social media or on Spotify, they don't apply to me. That's somebody else's space. Those are their feelings and those are theirs to own and they're not for me. So that's one piece of it. Another piece of it is like get used to figuring out the things that make you feel good as yourself whether it is like something visual, whether it's like a little pre-recording ritual, a lighting setup that really works for you, but figure out the things that make you feel good as yourself. And the third thing is I think identify people, like I work at a journalism organization, I'm a journalist. And so there is like a fine line that we have to ride, right? Between like being able to present and our information in like a great way that people want to engage with without also having people think that I am Charlie D'Amelio. And so we're trying to constantly figure that out. But I think that like there are people who are really, really good at like coming off as authoritative while also being inviting. And, you know, I think that there are people probably that you've seen on social media who are journalists who are really good at doing that. And like identify who those people are and what works for you about how they express their authority and how they maintain their journalistic distance. And I think those are really, I think that's a really, that was something that came up when we were talking to Hassan Piker. I think because he's an influencer, it's very easy when you're interviewing someone like that to want to play on their level. And that's just not what we do. That's not what I do. I mean, I had seen how poorly he was covered by the New York Times last year, where they called him, I think, like a liberal, like a leftist mind and a MAGA body or something like that. And it's like, you know, I'm not going to do that. Yeah, that's exactly the right response. So a place where I felt like I could be myself while also like protecting my authority was to ask him about that because I'm a journalist and I can do that. And so I think that's the thing to think about is like, where can you let your authority shine and finding people who are really good at doing that and kind of identifying why you trust them, not just as, you know, I don't know, people who you like to watch their videos, but like, why do you continue to trust them as journalists in this new format? So those are things I would think about.
The one thing I would add is the people are usually a lot nicer in person. So one of
the, or they run from you if you confront them in person about what they've said about you.
That also can happen. But like, people will say whatever they need to say on the platform to get their stuff seen, right? So like, if you're on a platform where rage baiting gets more attention, people rage bait, you see worse stuff. If you go to LinkedIn, there's not much of that because everyone's like actual name is attached to their resume. So like, most things are pretty positive. It's a very different reach you're talking about, but like, that is one of the nice things about that platform. My experience is like, there's definitely downsides to having yourself on social media and being that influencer type person, but usually you can see the positive in person much more easily. So if you go to events and conferences and meet people, almost always like people will be more friendly, nicer, easier to interact with. They'll have a story to tell you. And at least that's what I focus on is like that positivity is what motivates me.
Yeah, and I guess the last thing I'll add is like be gentle with yourself. Like, For some reason, people are always coming for my teeth in social clips. They like make lots of jokes, like 1 mile to the next tooth. And I was like, fuck, like I got these teeth for my grandma and I'm not going to close this gap. But the first couple times it happened, it was jarring. I wasn't ready for it. And then it like shook me, it rattled me. And then like after a while, I was like, okay, if a friend was coming to me with that, like what would I tell this friend? And so I just like talk to myself that way. And like, it's really important to show up for yourself and be gentle and be nurturing as you would be to somebody else. And I think like you said, sort of like picking the platform that you want to be on can help mitigate some of that. So if you don't want that hate, like stick to LinkedIn, or if you're like, all right, I'm ready to be like kind of kind to myself and gentle with myself, and I'm ready to take this leap into the trolls of the internet.
Troll city, yeah.
Yeah. But I also love what you said about like watching other people who are making it work. Like that is the best advice for anything, I think. Like imitate your heroes. Like they're doing their thing for a reason, and like they figured some stuff out. Like, watch them work.
Yeah. That is everybody. Thank you so much to Brittany for it together.
Woo!
Have a great day.
Let's keep it going for Chris, Sylvie, and Brittany.